Welcome to The Notion of You. I'm Tashi Jones, storyteller, guide, and your gentle reminder to slow down and come home to yourself. And today, we are stepping into season two. I just want to pause there for a second. If you've been here since the beginning, listening on walks, folding laundry, sitting in your parked car for 5 extra minutes before going inside, thank you, truly. This journey we are on is not small. It's not surface level. It asks us to look at ourselves with honesty. And you choosing to stay, to keep leaning in, means more than you probably realize. If you're new here, I'm so glad you found your way in. This season, we're going deeper, not louder, not more complicated, but deeper. I'm excited to give you more tangible tools for rebuilding self-trust. Tools that you can actually use in your real life. Tools that will meet your nervous system where it already is. Tools that will help you feel steady again. You are safe here. I want you to treat this space like two women sitting across from each other at a small wooden table with warm mugs in our hands. There's no rushing, no proving, just honesty. Take a slow breath with me. Let your shoulders drop. Let your jaw unclench. Feel your body where you are. If you've been scrolling, juggling a million tabs in your mind, replaying something you said earlier, or bracing for what you have to do next, this is your pause. This is your invitation to come back. This episode is for the woman who is endlessly kind to everyone else. The one who knows exactly what to say to a hurting friend. The one who shows up steady for her kids, her partner, her coworkers. The one who can extend grace outward so easily. But inside, the tone shifts. The voice gets sharp, critical, impatient. I know that voice. I still catch it. And what I've learned is that self-trust is not built in big public declarations. It's revealed in the small, unseen conversations we have with ourselves when no one is watching. That is where trust either grows or erodes. So before we go anywhere, I want you to notice your breath again. You're not behind. You're not broken. You're allowed to soften here. For me, it happens in the night. It doesn't really happen in the middle of the day very often. It's when the house is quiet, when the lights are off. My body is finally still. I should be resting. This is when my brain decides it's time for a performance review. I'll be lying there, trying to relax, and suddenly my thoughts start spiraling. They replay conversations from earlier. Things I could have said differently. Moments where I should have reacted better. Emails I should have responded to sooner. Goals I should have hit by now. And that gap shows up, the space between where I thought I'd be and where I am. That voice gets loud. It's not gentle. It's not curious. It's not compassionate. It's harsh, perfectionist, cold. It's not worth doing if you can't do it perfectly. Why even try if you're going to fall short? You should be further by now. There's no softness to it, no context, no humanity. And my body feels it. There's a weight on my chest, like something's pressing down and I can't get a full breath. My shoulders tighten towards my ears. My throat closes like I'm bracing for impact. Some nights, it's so overwhelming, I curl into a ball. Like I'm trying to make myself smaller. Like maybe the disappointment will help hurt less. There's this deep devastation that rises up. Not just frustration, not motivation to do better, but devastation, as if falling short is proof that something is fundamentally wrong with me. But here's the comparison that's wild. If my daughter were someday curled up in her bed, feeling that same kind of heaviness, I know what I would do. I would crawl in next to her. I would hold her. I would let her cry without rushing her to fix it. I would ask her where she feels the emotion in her body. Does it have a shape? I would help her name it. I would help her remind her that feelings move, that they are not permanent. I would ask her what is actually true. Is this how God speaks to his child? There would be no performance review. No, you should have done better. Just presence. Just safety. But in those late night moments for me, I don't usually have this clarity to catch the double standard in real time. I don't think I would never speak to her this way. I just believe that voice. I assume it's telling me the truth. And that's the part that started to wake me up. Not because I suddenly became kinder overnight, but because I began to realize that the tone I was living with internally was shaping how safe I felt inside my own body. Self-trust wasn't breaking down in big public failures, but it was eroding quietly. In the dark, in the way I spoke to myself when no one else could hear. Take a breath with me. That one was heavy. I still feel this in my body every day. I used to think that self-trust was about big decisions, like quitting a job or launching a business or setting a boundary out loud. Saying no, saying yes. The external visible things. But what I've come to understand is that those decisions are downstream. They're the fruit. The root of it is much quieter. Inner self-trust is the tone of your inner voice. The assumptions you make about yourself when something goes wrong. It's the story you default to when you fall short. Do you assume incompetence or failure? Do you assume you're behind, or do you assume you're learning, that you're human? Do you assume that you're still worthy? Most of us don't consciously choose that tone. We inherit it. We absorb it. We thought it was motivation. We thought it was discipline. We thought that it was what keeps us from becoming lazy or complacent. For me, that harsh perfectionism felt like a form of control. If I could just push myself hard enough, maybe I could outrun disappointment. Maybe I could prevent failures before it happened. But here's what my body started teaching me. You cannot build trust in a system that feels unsafe. If every mistake is met with internal criticism, your nervous system does not relax. It does not experiment. It does not risk. It quietly braces. And when you're bracing, you're not trusting. So I began asking different questions. Not how do I become more disciplined or how do I achieve faster, but how do I make it safe to be me? Because self-trust is not about perfection. It's about safety. It's about whether your inner world feels like a courtroom or home. So I started practicing something simple. It's not easy, but it should be simple. 3 steps. Notice it, name it, nurture it. That's it. The first step is noticing, and this one, if I'm honest, takes time. Because when that harsh voice that's been running in your system for years, it doesn't sound harsh. It sounds normal. It sounds responsible. So noticing means slowing down enough to hear that tone. When I'm laying in bed and my mind starts replaying the day, instead of automatically believing that spiral, I try and pause and ask myself, what is the sentence underneath this? What am I actually telling myself? Sometimes it's obvious, the you should be further, or you messed that up, or you're behind. Sometimes it's more subtle, the heavy sigh, the eye roll, the quiet comparison. Noticing is not about fixing yet. It's about catching it. But here's the key. You cannot notice from a place of self-attack. If you notice harshly, ugh, I'm doing this again. Why am I like this? You're just layering criticism on top of criticism. Noticing has to be neutral. There it is. Almost like you're watching a cloud pass by. That's step one. Next is naming. Once I notice the thought, I ask myself, what is this really? Because this is what softened things for me. Because most of my harsh thoughts are not actually truth. They're protective stories. Stories designed to keep me safe from shame. If I criticize myself first, maybe no one else will. If I lower my expectations, maybe I won't be disappointed. If I assume the worst, maybe I won't be blindsided. So instead of arguing with that thought, I name it. I remind myself that this is a protective story. This is perfectionism trying to keep me safe. This is fear of falling short. When I name it this way, not as truth, my body can shift. Shoulders can drop a little bit because now I'm not fighting myself. I'm understanding myself. Naming it allows you to separate from the thought. It creates that space. And space is where choices live. Step 3 is nurture. And this one will feel uncomfortable at first. Because I didn't know how to respond kindly to myself without feeling soft or naive. When I thought about my daughter, I thought about the way I instinctively hold her when she's overwhelmed. It's not the lecture. We don't tell her to toughen up. We create the safety first. So nurturing for me sounds like it makes sense that you're disappointed or you care. That's why this hurts. You're still allowed to try again. You're not behind. You're exactly where you're meant to be, on your path. None of the statements are about denying reality. We're not trying to pretend everything's perfect or bypass responsibility. We're simply holding truth and compassion together. This is what builds self-trust. Trust grows when you experience yourself as consistent and kind. This is where I want to get practical with you, because insight without practice just fades as a memory. One of the simplest tools I started using was a self-talk log. You can do this in a journal. I do it in my Notion app. I love it because it gives my mind the structure that I need to help me see patterns. I created a page called Evidence of Trust. It's got three sections: the situation, the old thought, and my new response. So when I catch it, maybe I sent an email and immediately judged myself, or I didn't get as much done as I would hoped, or I find that comparison loop to someone else, I log it. Like today, launching the podcast episode that felt very exposing. The old thought was, I'm not good enough. This should be better by now. But my new response is, I'm learning as I go. I'm learning publicly, and that takes courage. Growth takes time. This isn't logging 10 or 100 things a day. It's one here and there as I notice it. Sometimes you skip a day, sometimes you'll have three in a day. But what it does is it trains your brain to see the pattern. It externalizes the thought. When it's put on the page, it loses some of its power. It also allows me to build evidence. Because self-trust is not built on hype. It's built on consistency. Every time you respond with nurture, instead of attacking, you're layering a brick. A small one. Brick by brick, your inner world will start to feel safe again. And when your inner world feels safe, you take better risks. You speak up for yourself sooner. You can rest without spiraling. You can try again after falling short. Because you trust that even if you stumble, you won't abandon yourself. Let's add another layer, because our bodies hold on to these patterns. At night, when my chest is tight and my throat is closing, I can't think my way out of it. So I grab my oils. Chamomile, lavender, vetiver. I put a drop on the inside of my wrist, on the side of my neck. Nothing dramatic here, but sense that my body associates with calm. I take some deep breaths. And I can ask myself, what is true right now? Not what could happen, not what should happen, but what is true for me right now? The answer is usually small, like I'm safe in my bed, or I'm learning, or I'm allowed to grow at my own speed. The combination, noticing the thought, naming it as protection, and nurturing myself with a grounded truth, then calming my body, that's how self-trust becomes embodied and not just theoretical. Over time, something shifts. The harsh voice doesn't disappear, but it softens. It may come on faster, but it will leave quickly too. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, I catch it before it spirals. That's the progress. It's not about silencing the critic forever. It's about becoming the steady voice underneath it. The one that says, I'm here. I got you. And when you become that voice for yourself, something powerful happens. You stop needing perfection to feel worthy. You stop needing outside validation to feel secure. Because that trust is internal, built in the dark when no one is watching. And that kind of trust changes everything. Tonight, I want you to try something small. This isn't a full overhaul or asking for a personality shift, just a quick moment. When you're lying in bed and everything's quiet, or possibly even when you're brushing your teeth and you feel that thought spiral, catch one thought, just one. You don't have to fix the whole pattern or untangle the whole story, but notice the single sentence your mind is offering you. Could be the you should be further, or that wasn't good enough. Maybe it's the sigh or the comparison. Just catch it and pause. Grab your journal or Notion and log it. 3 lines. The situation, the old thought, and the new response. That's it. Maybe before you write that new response, try something calming, like grabbing your oils. Whatever feels grounding to you. Could be even just placing your hand on your chest and taking a breath. Let your body soften and ask, what would a steady, loving voice say right now? Not the delusional one, not self-hype, but a grounded one. Write that down. You are training your nervous system that mistakes do not equal exile. You don't need 10 examples, just one. That moment where you choose to nurture yourself instead of attacked. This is how self-trust is built. I used to think that when I trusted myself, it would feel loud and certain, unshakable. But what I'm learning is that it's much quieter than that. It's built in those moments when no one is clapping, no one is watching. You don't have an audience to impress. It's built in the dark, the way you speak to yourself when you fall short, the way you hold yourself when you're disappointed, whether your inner world feels like punishment or home. Self-trust doesn't happen or start when you get it right. It starts when you choose not to abandon yourself. When you catch that harsh thought and say, this is not the whole truth. The first time you respond with steadiness instead of shame. If you want support building that kind of inner safety, something structured, something steady to come back to, that's why I created Return to Wholeness, not as a fix or a performance plan, but as a support system, a place to rebuild the relationship with yourself slowly and intentionally. So for now, try logging things for a week. Notice what shifts. If something moves for you, if you can catch the thoughts faster, if your chest feels lighter, if you speak to yourself differently, I want to hear about it. You don't have to do this alone. I'm right here with you.